Okay, good morning, everyone. You hear me okay in the back? Can't hear me. Good morning, everyone. Good. It's always exciting to come to this year. Never know where we're going to be. Baruch Hashem is like musical classrooms. All right, I will try my best to project to the back. I will say there are plenty of seats up front if anyone needs and has rachmanis on my vocal cords. Whole section here that's open. Okay, so let's begin. So I think this is our last class for this, semester, chelek, limud. Okay, we're still in the first parak of parak shira, which again is one of the longest prakim of parak shira. And what I want to begin today is something that's really going to take us into our continuation after the break, which is the section of mayim, the section of water. So if we take a look in number one, so parak shira writes, mayim omrim, the water says, quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyah, Lekol tito hamon mayim v'shamayim v'ayal nesiyem mikze aretz berekim lamatar asa v'yotzi ruach me'atzrosav. When his voice resounds with a great mass of water in the heavens and he raises vapors from the ends of the earth, when he makes lightning amongst the rain and he brings out the wind from its storehouses. So here actually again the Navi Yirmiyah is describing in incredible and beautiful detail the incredible power and prowess of the Ribono Shel Olam. And the truth is, we know we are able to see the greatness and the strength of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the physical world in many different dramatic ways. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a sunrise, we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a starlit sky, but we also see HaKadosh Baruch Hu dramatically in the rain. Now that idea of the rain, you know, the Gemara says that there are three keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never gives over to a shaliach, three keys that God never gives over to a messenger. One of those keys is ultimately, again, the key to rain. Rain represents life. Rain represents vitality. Rain represents literally, not just metaphorically, but literally, the Ribono Shel Olam showering bracha down upon us. You know, it's interesting. We don't relate to this as much in the diaspora. You know, for us, rain is more often than not an inconvenience. Right? When it's raining, it's gloomy, it's sad, it's depressing. But you know, you ever go to Eretz Yisrael this period of the year, right? Between Sukkis and Tu B'Shvat. And the truth is, when it rains, it's like a Yom Tov. When it rains, it literally is. They feel, obviously, it has a lot to do with the fact that if you're situated in the middle of the Middle East, right? And there is a very finite rainy season, you of course recognize that every droplet of rain is an incredible bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But to take this a little bit further, here what the Navi Yirmiyah is really describing also is, if you look at his words, the lightning amongst the rain, the wind from its storehouses. I always find it amazing that if you ever see during a windstorm, or really better, like during a rainstorm, lightning and thunder. So I always find it incredibly dramatic how mankind, we have made so many technological advances. We could conquer so many things. We could fly to the moon. We could explore galaxies. But the one thing that very often we're powerless against in many dramatic ways is like a thunderstorm. You ever, how humbling is it? You're sitting in your house and what happens? A branch snaps and you have no power, like in Baltimore, it could be for 3 weeks, right? You have no, it's so incredible how it is that we are so advanced in so many different ways. Yet again, the power of the wind, the power of the rain, the power of lightning and thunder, those are things that are literally demonstrative of the exceptional physical prowess of the Ribono Shel Olam. It's an incredible thing. And that's what we're describing. That's what Navi Yirmiyah over here is describing in this pasuk. But what I'd like to try to do today is not really focus on the pasuk. I'd like to focus more on just the mayim. Now, what I want to point out to you is something really fascinating. In Perek Shira, as we're going to see, so we talk about water in a variety of different ways. Today is mayim, which is simply translated as water. We're also going to see yamim, which means, again, literally seas, S-E-A-S, the sea, naros, rivers, Ma'ayonos, springs. And although the common denominator of all those items is water, it's interesting to note that in Perek Shira, each of them are given their own section. Each of them are given their own paragraph. So as an introduction to kind of all the bodies of water, Perek Shira first focuses on Yamayim, And mayim just means water. Even though here the pasuk that's quoted speaks about water in the context ultimately of rain and of subterranean springs, the focus here is just on the concept of water. And so what we're going to try to focus on today a little bit is, remember again, all of Perek Shira are the lessons that we as human beings can learn from nature. Nature teaches us lessons. So today we're going to focus a little bit on the lesson we learn from water. So to appreciate this, we're actually going to go back and we're going to revisit something. We're going to revisit something that we started with a couple of weeks ago when we spoke about the Shamayim. We spoke about the sky. So take a look back at number two. We're going to focus this way, however, a little bit differently this time. Vayomer Elokim, number two. Vayomer Elokim yihira ki ebesoch hamayim. So if some of the sources look familiar, we actually covered them a number of weeks back when speaking about the heavens. So Vayomer Elokim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, back to the Genesis narrative. Yihira ki ebesoch hamayim. Let there be a rakia, which we normally translate as a sky or a sky divider, right? Pesach hamayim, in the midst of the water. V'mavdil bein mayim l'mayim. So this is very often a statement that goes a bit overlooked in the Bereishis story, because we often think of the rakia as the divider between what? Heaven and earth. Right? There's the Aretz, right? Hashamayim, Shamayim LaHashem, V'Aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. What divides, ultimately, again, between the Shamayim and between the Aretz? That's the Rakia. But if you look at the Pasuk, that's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that the primary purpose of the Rakia was to do what? V'mavdil bein mayim l'mayim. The idea of the Rakia was to divide between the waters. The world was all water, as we'll discuss. V'ruach Elokim rachefes al pnei hamayim. There's just water in this earth, and we'll discuss that in greater depth a little bit later. And the goal of the job of the Rakia is to divide between upper waters and lower waters. V'imavdil bein mayim l'mayim. Look at Rashi number 3. I'm sorry? Correct. So the Rakia effectively becomes the space, the barrier in between the upper waters and the lower waters. That is correct. So obviously, I want to just point out, nature, the world obviously becomes more refined, then becomes the appearance of Yabasha, of earth, different things like that. But I guess, at least initially, and it's really fascinating to contemplate this, at least initially, the entire purpose of the Rakia is to divide between upper waters and lower waters. Rashi says in number 3, B'soch HaMayim, B'emtza HaMayim. So first of all, this is just amazing to think about, because, and I don't know if you can, but it's interesting just to conjure up the mental image here. The world is water. You see, we often think the world is water. That means that the surface area of the earth is water. Rashi is saying it's much more than that. The universe in its totality, it sounds like, was water. Everything was water, and this is going to be so important as we go on. Everything was water. So where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the Rakia? In the middle of the water. Be'emtza HaMayim, number 3, Sheish Hefresh, Bein Mayim HaElyonim L'Rakia, Kemo Bein HaRakia LaMayim Sha'al HaAretz. HaLamarata, so Rashi says over here, to teach us what? That there is a separation between the upper waters and the expanse, as there is between the expanse and the waters that are on the earth. So according to Rashi, though, we don't have to get really too mired in these details. According to Rashi, everything is water. Everything is water. The Rakia is put there to divide between upper waters and lower waters. But the Rakia doesn't just represent what we'll call a thin division line. The Rakia, he understands, represents this expanse. So there's the creation of the Rakia, and then there is some barrier, some buffer, I should say, between the line of the Rakia and the celestial waters, between the line of the Rakia and the earthly waters. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the Rakia, the effective purpose of the Rakia is as a divider between upper waters and lower waters. So in other words, before the Rakia, what was there? Water, right? Safe answer, right? If I answer your question today, the answer is water, right? So again, there's water. There's water. Now, what's interesting to note is there's no upper waters, there's no lower waters. It would appear that at first glance, what was everything? Before the Rakia, everything was classified as upper waters. Now, what's interesting to me, the Rakia creates a barrier. So before the barrier is in effect, it appears all the waters have the status of upper waters. Now again, that's irrespective of their actual geographic orientation, because in the absence of a barrier between the waters and God, everything by definition is upper or celestial waters. Comes the Rakia, and the Rakia says, no, now there's a division. Now there are upper waters, and now there are lower waters. There's what's called Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim.
The Rakia
is a space. It's an expanse. As that's, yeah, it's a space. Correct. So Rashi says over here, so again, so now, before we get to the next source, so this image is very important. It's all water. All the waters have the status of Mayim Elyonim. Comes the Rakia, the divider. There's now Mayim Elyonim, Mayim Tachtonim. As a result, now this, by the way, is fascinating in general throughout the Genesis narrative, throughout Maaseh Bereishis, which is, when everything is living together, there's no tension. As soon as God starts making divisions and boundaries, you see tension in nature. You see tension in nature. It happens almost every single day of the creation story. This is the whole medrash between the sun and the moon. There's strife between the sun. What does that mean? Strife between the sun? Because remember again, as soon as the Kadosh Baruch Hu begins to create boundaries, demarcation, limitations, there's tension in nature. As a result, Kadosh Baruch Hu splits the waters. There's now upper waters. There's now lower waters. Writes the Zohar at number 4, something amazing. Begin the Mayim Tason. When it comes now to the lower waters, Inun Bochin, the lower waters, after the creation of the Rakia, those waters which were now put to a second, what's called second tier status. They are the waters underneath the Rakia. They are the waters now further away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, writes the Zohar, Inun Bochin. They begin to cry. The lower waters begin to cry and they say, Va'amrin, Anan Bayon Lemehavi Kadamalka. And they begin to cry and they say, we want to be before the king. We want to be before the king. What's happening over here? Like I said before, the creation of the Rakia, all of the waters are celestial waters. Before the creation of the Rakia, everything is together before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now the Rakia comes along, and by the way, the Rakia is one of the most dramatic parts of creation. Why? Because what does the Rakia do? The Rakia creates a split between heaven and earth. Before the Rakia, it's one big celestial chalut. You know, everything is together. Comes the Rakia, there's something called Shamayim, right? There's something, the celestial sphere, and then there's the earth. If you're above the Rakia, it would appear you're part of God's domain. If you're below the Rakia, you're part of the earthly domain. The waters are split. Waters which were just yesterday before HaKadosh Baruch Hu are now confined to the area beneath the Rakia. Writes the Zohar, the waters begin to cry. They begin to cry. And they say this, Anan Bayon Lamehave Kadamalka. We want to be before God. It's not fair. Zelo fair, as they say. It's not right. We want to be before God. Why should we be separated by the Rakia? Why should we be relegated to this second tier status of being beneath the Rakia? We, just a moment ago, we were before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we're far, quote unquote, far away. It's not right. It's not right. And this creates incredible tension within Maaseh Bereishis. So the Rabbeinu Bachya quotes an amazing medrash. If you look at number 5, so the second line in, V'chin Amru B'Medrash, he quotes over here the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. And the Medrash says, Mayim HaTachtonim Nikru Mayim Bochim. The lower waters were called the crying waters. V'lama Nikru Mayim Bochim. Why were the lower waters called the crying waters? Ki B'Sha'a Shechalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu Es HaMayim V'Nasan Eilu L'Mala because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Rakia and he automatically divided the waters, some waters were placed above the Rakia, some waters were placed below the Rakia. Hischilu mayim hatachtonim bochim. The lower waters began to cry. What did they cry about? Amru, oy lanu shelo zachinu la'alos lemalo lios krovim lios reinu. Woe to us that we are not privileged to ascend on high and to be before our Creator. So what happens? This is amazing. So the lower waters are now distressed. They feel exiled. They feel pushed away. They feel relegated to a second tier status. So what do? This is incredible. Ma'asu he'izu pnehem ubiku tahomos ubikshu la'alos aj. So what happens? So the water had chutzpah. What did the water do? The waters begin to gush up from underneath their subterranean springs, and they threaten essentially to flood the earth and to try to reunite with the above waters. The waters will not be relegated to a second tier spiritual status. The waters will not resign themselves to this newfound reality of being divided by God from the Rakia. So they push up. They decide essentially, kiviyachol, to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, here's the incredible part. They're not rebelling against God. They're trying to rebel to God. They're ultimately trying to regain their former status and their former standing as being upper waters. So what happens? Ad shegar b'an HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Ribon Shalom chastises the waters and tells the waters to stay where they are. But as a result, something dramatic happens. Amar lahem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ho'il iluch vodi asisen kolkach, Chedesh Baruch Hu says to the lower waters, because you had such a desire to come closer to me, because you exhibited such a cheshik, such a want, such a desire to reunite with me, therefore I hereby decree the following. The upper waters do not have the right to sing praise to me until the lower waters do. No one is permitted to sing to me, Chedesh Baruch Hu says, no waters, until the earthly waters sing to me. Quotes the Pasuk, V'lo od, skip down to the last line of number 5, this is what we're going to focus on. Ela sha'asidin atem likarev al gabe amizbeach b'melach v'niso chamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says something absolutely amazing. He says, lower waters, I see your incredible desire for closeness. I see your incredible desire for connection. So here's the deal. As a reward for your cheshek, as a reward for your desire ultimately to come closer to me, so leaving aside the shira part that's a bit more esoteric, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, temple service cannot function without you. Because every single karban, you will be a part of every single sacrificial offering. How so? With salt. With salt. Salt comes from, or at least Beis HaMikdash salt, is sea salt. Sea salt comes from the water. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as a reward for your incredible desire for connection, as a reward for your incredible desire for closeness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, nothing goes down in the Beis HaMikdash without the presence of water. Water is present in two dramatic ways. Number one, salt. Number two, Niso Chamayim, which refers to the very unique sacrificial offering on Sukkis, of the sprinkling of the water on the Mizbech. If you take a look at number 6, so the Torah says in Vayikra, V'chol karban minchascha b'melach tzimlach. You have to salt every karban mincha, right? You have to put, and you shall salt every one of your meal offerings with salt. B'melach tzimlach, v'lo tashbis bris melach me'al kol mincha secho. Al kar karbancha takriv melach. You cannot offer up a carbon without salt. If you offer up a carbon without salt, the carbon is invalid. Why the insistence on salt? So the Torah itself calls the salt, it's a bris. It's a covenant of salt. What's the covenant? Rashi number 7 says, Melach bris, shabris krusa lemelach, misheshes yemei bereshis. Because there was a covenant that was made with salt already during the 6 days of creation. Shehuftuchu hamayim atachtonim likarev b'mizbeach b'melach, v'nisoch hamayim b'chag. Because the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calmed the lower waters, the lower waters were upset. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu calmed the lower waters was by telling them, you will forever be a part of ongoing temple service. There is nothing that happens inside of the Beis HaMikdash without you, both through the offering of salt on every single carbon. Every single carbon requires salt, and Nisoch HaMayim, the water libation on Sukkis. So so here is the incredible, tension and the incredible development of events, or I should say progression of events, with the waters. Rakia creates tension. Upper waters, lower waters. Lower waters get upset. they kivyachol threaten to drown the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, stop. You are important to me. Just because you're not up in the celestial sphere with me does not mean you aren't important to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows their importance by ultimately making them an indispensable part of temple service. And by the way, to this very day, there's a halacha. What's the halacha? The halacha is that on your table you are supposed to keep salt. And that is true even if you're on a low salt diet or a no salt diet. It has nothing to do with salt as a condiment and everything to do with the fact that the Gemara says that the shulchan, the table, is like an altar. And just like the altar always requires melach, always requires salt, so too again the table also requires salt. What's the origin of this practice? Again, all goes back to this initial story in Bereishis. Lower waters are upset, want to come up. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm sorry, you can't come up. You have a place down here in the earth. But because you have such a desire for connection, see, there's an incredible message in this, which is, whenever, I was going to say a Jew, but it's not even just a Jew. Whenever anything or anyone expresses a genuine desire for closeness to the Ribono Shel Olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu never says no. God sometimes, maybe often, says no to the things we ask. That's quite possible, because often we think we know what we need, but we don't often know what we need. The one thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu never says no to is that when a person says, Ribono Shel Olam, I yearn to be close to you. I yearn to have a connection with you. I yearn to have a relationship. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never says no to a relationship. We'll sometimes say no to the request. And here's the paradox, right? Remember again, how long does it take in the Torah for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say no to a request? How long does it take? 6 psukim. Right? 6 psukim into the Torah, we already see the first tefillah and the first divine no. The first divine no. Right? The waters, this earthly waters, want to reunite with the celestial waters, want to reunite with God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. No, you can't have that. I understand you think you want it. I understand you think that it's good. You think it's the right thing. I'm God. I know more. The answer is no. The answer is no. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees a sincere desire for connection, the answer to that is always a resounding yes. And this is incredibly important because sometimes, or maybe very often, you know, we've spoken about this many times before, that every generation has its struggle. So it could be 2 generations ago, the struggle was Shmirah Shabbos. Our generation now, the struggle is really for inspiration and connection. Because we don't really have a struggle with observance anymore. Right? We Baruch Hashem, are able to observe. But inspiration, connection, emunah, those are the things we struggle with. Sometimes we forget. Everyone knows that if you're struggling with Parnassah, what do you do? What do you do? No, answer number one is get a job, right? Yeah, that's right. I have to put in my hishtadlus, right? I put in my hishtadlus. And concurrently, it's very, very important, like, idea that yes, if you have a struggle with parnosa, I might have to work longer or harder hours. Concurrently, I dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have a problem with refuah, with my health, I dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while simultaneously seeking out the proper shluchei Hashem in the form of medicine. Everything, it's interesting that sometimes the one area where people forget to reach out to God is in my very relationship with God. I'm struggling with emunah. I'm struggling with connection. So it's interesting. So we think to ourselves, well, if I'm struggling with emunah and connection, that's not really about God. That's about me. I have to figure that out. It's not, but yes, that is true. I have to figure out what I can do. But concurrently, I dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam. I don't feel close to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I feel estranged from you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of circumstances of my life, I feel pushed away from you. I don't want to feel that way. I got it. You might answer no to a lot of the things I ask of you. But what I'm asking of you is, even when you say no, I want you to make me feel close. I want you to make me feel loved. I want you to make... And this is this incredible dialectic in Yiddishkeit, because sometimes we think to ourselves, I'll feel close if I get X. I ask for this. If you give it to me, I'll feel close. And if you don't give it to me, I'm not going to feel close. Life doesn't work that way. A lot of times we know the answer is no, but yet I still have to cultivate the closeness. How do you cultivate closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So the answer answer is, there are things that I can do as an individual, but like every single other thing in life, where I recognize I could put in my hishtaglus, but I have to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. Emuna, bitachon, inspiration, dveikus, connection is the same thing. I have to ask God to help me with those things as well. Like anything else in life, you can't ask for divine help, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show and do nothing. That doesn't work. But at the same time, just like I ask for help with HaKadosh Baruch Hu with my parnasa, and I'm ready to work even harder, I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help with my refuah, and I'm going to go to the doctor, I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help with my emuna, with my devekis, with my connection. I'm going to do what I need to do, but God, it would be incredibly helpful if you, I'm trying to come closer to you, if you could pull me a little bit closer to you, that would be fantastic. And it's from this story with the waters that you see that even when you get a note to your request, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still sees the desire to come close. And whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees a desire to come close, that overture is always reciprocated. There is no such thing as a Jew who wants, and it's not just a Jew, waters also. There's no such thing as anything in this world that has a desire to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam says, no. No such thing. Everyone, everything, if you have a genuine desire to come close, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always brings you closer. The Mayim say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we'd like to go back up to the celestial sphere. To that, God says, no. But, I see that you want to be close to me. So let's figure this out. Well, I can't give you what you want. I can't give you what you want. Because the world has to run in a certain way, and there are certain things that have to occur in different ways. I can't give you the yes that you so badly want out of life. But, what I can do is to figure out with you a way to have a sense of connection. To figure out with you to have a sense of devekis. And that's what happens. There's a no to the request, but at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the water, you are a part of everyday Beis HaMikdash service. You're part of this melach. There is salt with everything. Sukkis, one of the most important avodas in the Beis HaMikdash, Nisuch HaMayim. It's the beginning of the rainy season. Rain is vitality, rain is life. So the very waters, which are not able to be reunited in the celestial sphere, are the cornerstone of every single thing we do day in and day out in the Beis HaMikdash. But then something amazing happens. Take a look at number 8. There's a pasuk in Tehillim. So I quoted this to you in part when we were speaking about the Shamayim, but today we're going to get a little bit more into it. So the pasuk says in Tehillim, Al Naros Bavel, Shom Yashavnu Gam Bachinu Bizachrenu Esiyom. So David HaMelech says, again, in one of the prophetic kapitlach, on the banks of the rivers of Bavel of Babylon, there we sat and we wept when we remembered Tzion. So this is an incredibly moving kapitel. Many of you know, Shulchan Aruch brings down that one should say this kapitel of Tehillim prior to benching during the week, right? Shir HaMalos on Shabbos, Al Naros Bavel during the week. And the reason for that is because every day we have an obligation to remember the Churban. We have an obligation to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So during the week, we do that by reciting Al Naros Bavel, by reciting this paragraph. On Shabbos, we also do it. Shir HaMalos is also a kapitel to him. Shir HaMalos B'Shuv Hashem Es Shiva Sion is also a kapitel about restoration, about redemption, about salvation, about Mashiach. But it's in a more positive tone. Since it's Shabbos, we don't mourn actively on Shabbos. It's the same theme. Al Naros Bavel, Shir HaMalos, Shir HaShem, Shiva Sion, Nikachomim. Same theme. Restore the Beis HaMikdash. Just Al Naros Bavel is a bit more sad, right? And Shir HaMalos is much more joyous. So again, on a simple level, David HaMelech is giving form over here to this incredible episode. We're being led out of Eretz Yisrael. We're being led out. Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. And what happens? We sit by the banks of the rivers of Bavel and we remember that which was. We see the smoke rising up from the Harabayas. We see the ruins of the Beis HaMikdash. We see the millions who were killed. And ultimately, again, we're being led out into an unknown diaspora. And the Medrash in number 9 says has an incredible, incredible story here. Ba'osa Shah Amar Moshe Liyamyo. So let me give you the background context of this. The Medrash explains that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he did not tell anyone what he was going to do. He didn't tell the Malachim. He didn't tell the Avos and the Maos. He didn't tell Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't tell anyone. Why? So the Midrashic understanding is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he needed to do and was concerned that if he would share his plans with someone, what would happen? They would convince him not to do it. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't share anything. So the Medrash relates, obviously the Navi Yirmiyo knew what was happening because the Navi Yirmiyo was the prophet of destruction. He was the one who saw all this, who warned Klal Yisrael about all of this. So the Medrash then goes on to explain that after the destruction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tasks Yirmiyahu with going and telling everyone what happened. So the Medrash relates that he goes to Maras HaMachpelah and he tells Avram, and the Avos and Imos are crying. And it's such a moving Medrash. Avram Avinu is pulling out his hair. You can't believe what happened to my children. I was willing to sacrifice my one and only son for you. And how can you do this? And it's a moving and emotional Medrash. Yirmiyahu HaNavi then goes to summon Moshe Rabbeinu. And the way the Medrash says it is, he stands in the Sinai Desert, because what's the problem with summoning Moshe Rabbeinu? Which is, no one knows where he's buried. So Yirmiyahu goes to the Sinai Desert, where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried somewhere there, Har Ahar, right? And what happened? I'm sorry, that's Aaron HaKohen, Midbar Sinai. And what happens? He says, Ben Amram, Ben Amram. Son of Amram, son of Amram, Kadosh Baruch has something to tell you. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes back, and Yirmiyahu HaNavi very reticently tells Moshe Rabbeinu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and the Jews are exiled. So that's where this Medrash picks up in number 9. Ba'osa Shah Amar Moshe Li Yirmiyahu Lech Lefanai She'elech Va'avi'im Ve'era Mi Maniach Yado Aleihem. It's actually such a moving Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yirmiyahu, it's okay. We can fix this. I've dealt with the Jews in difficult situations before. Right? It's actually very apropos. We begin in Chumash Mos this week. Chumash Mos is the story of Egyptian servitude. Moshe Rabbeinu's first task, his first mission, is to face down a despotic, unpredictable ruler. So Moshe says, Yirmiyahu, okay, just take me to the people. I'll figure out who's subjugating them, and I will redeem them. Lech va'avim. I'll bring them back to Eretz Yisrael. So Yirmiyahu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't. I wish I could take you, but literally the road is littered with corpses. There's no way to even walk to them. Moshe says, Yirmiyahu, just show me the way. Just take me to them and we'll figure it out. This, by the way, this is the Roa Ne'em, and this is the shepherd of Klal Yisrael. You know, the shepherd never gives up on the flock. The shepherd says, just get me to them. Get me to my people, and I will figure out a way to redeem them. Miat halach Moshe v'yamu Yirmiyahu lefanav. So you have to imagine the scene. Yirmiyahu HaNavi is walking. Moshe is following right behind him. Ad shegia l'naros Bavel. Until they reach the rivers of Bavel. And as the rivers of Bavel, the Jews, the broken Jewish people are sitting by the banks of the river of Bavel. Ra'u l'Moshe. They see Moshe. Chal Yisrael sees Moshe Rabbeinu coming. Now, of course, you have to understand, it's the Medrash. This generation, again, remember, it's hundreds of years after Moshe Rabbeinu has already died. But again, I guess when you see Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, I don't think there's like a hello, my name is Moshe, Roa Ne'eman B'Yisrael. But I guess when you see Moshe Rabbeinu, you know it's Moshe Rabbeinu. So they see Moshe. And what do they say? Ve'amru zeh lazeh. Ba ben Amram mikivra liftosinu miyad sarenu. And the people who are so broken, are so filled with hope, are so filled with optimism. Look, Ben Amram has come back from the dead. Moshe Rabbeinu has come back from his grave and he's here to redeem us. He's here to take us home. Yotza baskova Amra gezeira hi milafanai. And a voice booms out from the heavens and says, no one's going home. No one's going home. Gezeira hi milafanai. This is the decree. This is the edict. The Jewish nation is going into diaspora. Miat amar lahem Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the people, and it's such a moving exchange. He says, Banai, lahachzir eschem I efshar. My children, to bring you home, I cannot do. I cannot bring you home. Shekvar nigzira gezeira. Because as you just heard, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already decreed that you're not coming home now. But I give you a bracha. Ela hamakom yachzir eschem b'mehira. I hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings you home quickly. I cannot bring you home today. I, even the great Moshe Rabbeinu, cannot change the Gezerah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even though, remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu did do it. He did change the Gezerah in the past. But I guess Moshe Rabbeinu knows the Gezerah that is immutable versus the Gezerah which is changeable. This Gezerah is immutable. It cannot be changed. So I give you the bracha. Hamakom yachzir eschem b'mehira. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring you home quickly. V'yaniach osam. And Moshe Rabbeinu turns around and he leaves. Ba'osa shah heirumu kolam bebichia gedola al sha'alsa bichiyasam lamarom. In that moment, Klal Yisrael began to cry with even greater intensity, to the point that their cries rose up all the way to the heavens. You know, just to understand the dynamic here, sometimes when a person has tsar, so they cry, okay? But then at a certain point in time, you accept your reality. Then what happens? When you're given a glimmer of hope, and then that hope is taken from you, the pain becomes even more intense. Even though nothing changed, the metzias is the same, the pain is still the pain. But when you're given hope, that hope is taken away from you, the same pain becomes amplified. Klal Yisrael, they knew, all right, we're done. They said, make this just destroyed, we're exiled. When they see Moshe Rabbeinu, what do they see? Geula. Geula. Redemption. Hayinu kechomim. It was just a bad dream. We're going back home. And then the great Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm powerless to help you. The pain becomes even more intense. And that's the pasuk. Al naros bavel, sham yashavnu, gam bachinu. So the way the Medrash understands, gam bachinu, gam, means we cried more. We cried when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We cried when Jews were slaughtered. We cried when we were being let out. But as we were sitting by the banks of the rivers of Bavel, and we were just ready to accept our new reality, Moshe Rabbeinu comes, dangles Geula in front of us, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu shuts it down. Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu, we saw Moshe, Gam Bachinu. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, go, go, you can't do anything to help, Gam Bachinu, Gam Lashon Ribui, add additional crying, we cried even more. We cried even more. But there's an incredible medrash. The medrash says in number 10, Gam bachinu, bachinu im hamayim. So the medrash says something dramatically amazing. The way the medrash reads this pasuk is, Al naros bavel, sham yashavnu, gam bachinu. So the way the medrash understands that we sat by the banks of the rivers of Bavel, and as the waters of the rivers were crying, gam bachinu, we cried along with the rivers. The water's crying, we're crying. Why is the water crying? Why is the water crying? So now we understand why the water's crying. Because remember again, with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not just us who is impacted. Who else is impacted? The earthly waters are impacted as well. Those waters which were promised by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even though we are divided by the Rakia, we will still find a way up to you. We'll still have an avenue, a conduit up to you, through the Melach, through the salt, through the Nisuch HaMayim. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the earthly waters are cut off. And so can you imagine this scene? Klal Yisrael, a broken nation, is sitting by the river. And they hear the Naros Bavel crying. They hear the earthly waters crying. And the earthly waters are crying, saying, Ribono Shel Olam, how could you cut us off? Ribono Shel Olam, how could we live if we're going to be so far? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now you promised us during Sheshes and Meberashes that there was a bris, that there was a covenant, that we'd be forever connected, and now you cut us off. And Klal Yisrael hears the waters crying, and what happens? Gam Bachinu. The Jew cries along with the waters. Because the Jew says, oh my gosh, we're cut off also. The waters are cut off. We're cut off. And so the Jewish nation, together with the Naros Bavel, are all crying together, lamenting their disassociation, lamenting their being cut off, lamenting their separation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The waters are separated, the Jews are separated, but then something amazing happens. Take a look at number 11. So this is incredible. So look at the very, like a couple of psukim later in the same capital of Al Naros Bavel, chapter 137. What do we see? What do we say in that capital? Eich nashir es shir Hashem al admas nechar. What do we say? Ibn Sholom, it's over. It's over. The relationship is done. How can we ever sing the song to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on foreign soil? How can we ever sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a land that is not our own? Amongst peoples that are not our own, in cultures that are not our own. Because what's happening over here in chapter 137 in Tehillim is that the waters are crying because they're cut off. And they are cut off. The Jew says, well, if the waters are cut off, then what? Then what? Then we are cut off too. How can we ever sing? But then something amazing happens. You remember our shir on the Midbar? Remember that shir? Just shake your head yes, it'll make me feel better. Right? Excellent. Good. Right? Remember that shir on the Midbar? What did the Midbar teach us? That wherever you are in life, wherever you are in life, a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always possible. You see, we thought we were in the same boat as the waters. We thought that we were the same collective experience as the waters. The waters are crying because they're cut off. We're crying because we're cut off. And then we say, Eich nashir asher shema admas nechar. How can you be a Jew outside of Eretz Yisrael? How can you be a Jew without a Beis HaMikdash? How can you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without again having a divine domicile in this world? It's done! And then something amazing happens, which is, it wasn't done. It wasn't done. We find our footing in Bavel. By the way, not only do we find our footing in Bavel, what was the big problem? We can relate to this. Bavel was too good. Bavel was too good. The yeshivas of Bavel were better than the yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael. The greatest rabbinic minds of the generation were coming to Bavel to learn, not Eretz Yisrael. Talmud Bavli is more authoritative than Talmud Yerushalmi, to the point that when Ezra brings the Jews back during the Second Temple era, almost no one comes with him. We have this idea, everybody goes back, Ezra! Ezra was a Navi. Ezra, Jews. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, time to go back. Rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Let's go back. And what do people say? How many pizza stores do you have over there? Right? Is there a Seasons that'll stay open? Right? Is there this? Is 7 Mile Market? Is there this? What? Meaning, life in Bavel became a picture of spiritual perfection to the point that the spiritual infrastructure in Bavel was superior to that in Eretz Yisrael. So we're not going to comment on the challenge of the Jew having it too good in the diaspora. That's not our topic for today. What I just want to point out is something amazing. That herein lies the difference between us and the water. You see, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, the water is cut off. To this very day, the Mayim Tachtonim are still crying. The Mayim Tachtonim, the Al Naros Bavel, Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachim, the Naros Bavel are still crying. Every body of water in this earth is still crying. 2,000 years later, the water is still crying. Why? Because as the Zohar said, the Lashon of the Zohar is, Anan Bayin Lamehave Kadam Alka. The earthly waters are crying because they say, we want to be before God. We want to have a place before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are cut off, and they are cut off. And the waters start crying. We think we also start crying. But then the waters teach us something amazing. They are cut off, but we are not. The power and the resilience of the Jew is that even in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, we still have the ability to soar to the most magnificent spiritual heights. It is true that until we have a Beis HaMikdash, as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash lacking in our life, there is something missing from the fabric of our people. It's hard for us to identify or to understand what it is, because for over 2,000 years, we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash. So it's hard for us to appreciate that which is lacking when you don't know what it is that you had. But we know deep down in our neshamas that there is something lacking. But in this case over here in Perek Shira, the water is teaching us on a dramatic lesson, not through water emulation, but through water contrast. The water says to us, you, Jews, are not like me, the water. I, the water, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, am cut off. I, the water, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, are stymied, are limited in my ability to ascend on high. Excuse me. But you Jews, you mankind, even in the absence of the most important spiritual address, can soar to the most magnificent of heights. The water is stuck without the medium of a Beis HaMikdash. We are not. To be clear, there are certainly things that are missing from our national character, and yes, even from our personal character, without a Beis HaMikdash. But the absence of the Beis HaMikdash does not prevent us from climbing even to the most incredible and uplifted of spiritual heights. I think we have to take this one step further. Because the truth is, the Beis HaMikdash is an incredible metaphor for life equilibrium. You know, this is, if you think about it for just a moment, what is it that we're davening for in a Beis HaMikdash? Right? Let's be honest. The Beis HaMikdash is going to present some significant problems for us. I want to be honest and put this out there. Why is he going to put it out there? You know, everybody likes to daven in their shul, right? Because I like people like me, right? I like people like me, and I don't want to daven with people like that. I don't want to daven with people like that. I want to daven with people like me. I have news for you. You know that there's like one Beis HaMikdash. There's no like yeshivish Beis HaMikdash, Hasidish Beis HaMikdash, modern Orthodox Beis HaMikdash, you know, modern yeshivish Beis HaMikdash, modern Hasidish Beis HaMikdash, right? Religious. There's one Beis HaMikdash. Don't underestimate the incredible acclimation that is going to take for us. We have become a very bifurcated and segmented people, right? We like, this is why again, and this is not, I'm just on a different, can you imagine, by the way, and I'm a big proponent and big fan of shuls, but imagine for a moment if everybody didn't need their own shul. And imagine for a moment again, if as communities came together in one or two strategically placed houses of worship, imagine all of the money the Jewish community would have to allocate towards other things if we didn't need a million different houses of worship because everyone could only daven where it's exactly the way they want it, how they want it, with who they want it. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox now. But understand, when the Beis HaMikdash comes, when Mashiach comes, there's one Beis HaMikdash. There's one Beis HaMikdash. That's all there is. So your Beis HaMikdash represents a sense of universal equilibrium. So I want to tell you something incredible. You know, there are times in life, in our personal lives, when we have our Beis HaMikdash. There are times in life. What does that mean? There are times in life of equilibrium. There are times in life of harmony. There are times in life when things are good and things are as they should be. And then there are times in life when my Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. My sense of tranquility, my sense of equilibrium, my sense of life harmony has been disrupted. My personal Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. And we often, unfortunately, think that when our personal Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, there is no longer an ability for self-actualization. I feel like the waters that have been cut off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My Beis HaMikdash is not here, and therefore my ability to grow, my ability to transcend, my ability to self-actualize are going to be severely and fundamentally limited. And the Mayim teaches us something amazing. The only thing in this world stunted by the absence, you know the only two things stunted by the absence of a Beis HaMikdash in this world, the only two things? Number one, water. Good, excellent. And number two, livestock, animals. Because remember, the ability to offer up karbanos is one of the ways in which the animal kingdom is lifted up and becomes a davar shebikdusha. In the absence of karbanos, the absence of sacrificial service, so there are parts of the world that are limited. But not us. Not us. And again, I want to be clear. We need a Beis HaMikdash because we need universal equilibrium restored. And there's a piece of us that cannot be whole without a Beis HaMikdash. But I just want to point out that again, at the end of the day, the Mayim tells us, I, water, am stunted. You, human beings, are not. And the same that applies to the national Beis HaMikdash applies to our personal Beis HaMikdash as well. All of us suffer through a personal Churban Beis HaMikdash. Some of us have lost one temple. Some of us have lost two temples. Some of us have lost dozens of temples already throughout our lifetime. And every single time my personal Beis HaMikdash of life tranquility and life equilibrium goes up in flames, I say to myself, you know what? I'm done. I cannot do this anymore. And the water tells us that is patently false. Whenever your personal Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it is always jarring. It is always unnerving. It could be catastrophic. It could feel like the sky is falling. But just like we've continued on, we also said thousands of years ago, can you imagine this pasuk? Eich nashira shira shama ad mas nechar. Can you imagine this, by the way? Just want to send the irony. So we said thousands of years ago, impossible, can't go on. Can't go on, impossible. What are we doing? Thousands of years later, we're learning Perek Shira in yet another diaspora community. Because when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we thought life was over. We thought life can't go on. And then something amazing happens, which is there's a gaping hole in my heart because of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. But I'm not the water. The water was shut down. I am not shut down. It's true, when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, life is different. Life looks different. I'm different. The world is different. But there's the ability for growth. There's the ability for self-actualization. There's the ability for greatness. And what is true in the national Beis HaMikdash is true in the personal Beis HaMikdash as well. We all suffer through churban. We all suffer catastrophic loss. Some of us suffer catastrophic loss of loved ones. Some of us suffer catastrophic loss of dreams and aspirations. Some of us suffer catastrophic loss of just normal living, normalcy in life. We all suffer a churban. And the Mayim tells us, do not be stunted like I am. I'm stuck. I'm crying 2,000 years later because I no longer have the conduit for self-actualization and growth. The Mayim tells us, you are not like me. Don't cry like I cry. Al naros bavel, sham yashavnu gam bachinu. When we first experienced Chorban, we cry with the waters, lamenting our collective plight of an inability to move on. But then as life goes on, the waters remain crying, but we find the strength to move forward. That's lesson number one. But let me share with you two other shorter lessons in a couple of minutes we have left. There's something fascinating about water in general. So if you take a look at number 12, so the pasuk says, again, I'm not going to get into the context of the pasuk, but more just want to show you the concept. So the Torah is speaking about someone who contracted a ritual impurity. In this case, it happens to be tzara'as, which we loosely translate as leprosy. But the amazing part is that for every form of impurity in the Torah, right, for every form of impurity, in order to purify yourself, what do you need? Water. Right? You need a mikvah. And by the way, when we say the word impurity, we know we often translate tumah as impurity. But the truth is, tumah, it's not really a good etymological definition. The real definition of tumah is really the absence of purity. Right? Tumah is the absence of tara. There are two states. There's tara, which is purity, and then there's tuma, which is the lack of purity. This is incredibly important on so many different levels, because there are certain forms of quote unquote tuma that are not impure. A woman goes to the mikvah, there's not an impurity in terms of like an uncleanliness. There's the ability to create life, and which is tara, and then when that ability is no longer there for that particular period of time, there's an absence of that tara. And every single time you change states in life, you have to go to the mikvah. The water somehow helps with the changing of the states. So why is that? What is it about water, right? Because remember again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this. He could have just as easily said, you know, say the three following kapitlach of Tehillim, and suddenly again you've gone from tuma to tara. Or from, right? Why the water? Everything, again, every single form of tuma is rectified with water. Different forms of tuma are dealt with in different ways. Like, you know, well, we don't have to get into specific examples. But the point is, I look at the end of number 12. One will wash their flesh in water and become purified. Going to the mikvah affects purification. Why? What is it about the water that affects purification? So the Sefer HaChinuch gives two incredible ideas. The first one is relatively simple. Look at number 13. Sheyesh b'tvila remez ala tovel, sheyinake nafsho mikol chet, kimo sheteva hamayim lenakos kol davar hamiskabes bohem. So what's interesting to note about this is as follows. So here, remember, the Sefer HaChinuch happens to be specifically referring to tzara'as. Tzara'as comes as a result of Lashon Hara. So here he's talking about, again, the cleansing from sin. So this is just like water has the ability to clean something, right? Water has a cleansing identity to it. Not in a metaphysical or metaphoric sense, right? But the idea is water is a cleansing agent. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, just as water could clean your clothing, just as water is a cleaning agent, so too ultimately, again, going to the mikvah represents ultimately what? A cleansing from sin. So this is very beautiful in terms of for tzaras, or those types of tumah, which are associated with sin. So the idea is I go to the mikvah, which by the way, this is where the mikvah motif also comes along in terms of immersion before Yamim Noraim, immersion before Shabbos, before Yom Tiv, this idea of the cleansing ability of mikvah. This, of course, this concept is a major tenet in Hasidus, where again, immersion in mikvah, not just for women, but for men on a daily basis, is an incredibly important aspect, activity of daily living, and all of it is about this cleansing ability of water. Just like water has the ability to clean the schmutz off my shirt, it also has the ability somehow to clean the schmutz off my neshama. That when I go into the main mikvah, I am cleansed. The impurities come off of me. The impurities are taken away. But then the Sefer HaChinuch number 14 says something amazing. He says, "Ubetam hamayim sheyitaru kol tameh." But he says on a deeper level, because remember again, not every form of tumah is associated with sin. Right? So on kind of like big adol in a more panoramic sense, so what is the message of mikvah? And he says something amazing. Echshov al tzad pshat. He says, I think the simple understanding is ki ha'inyon hu kedei shiyira ha'adam es atzmo achra ha'tvila kilu nivra ba'osa shah. Listen to the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. He says, when a person goes to the mikvah, he should view himself after the immersion, or herself after the immersion, as if they have been created anew. Created all over again. The true power of mikvah immersion is the ability to start all over again. Where does this come with mikvah? Kimo shahaya ha'olam kulo mayim tera heyos v'ha'adam. And this is amazing. This is the Sefer HaChinuch. What was the first thing in this world? The first thing. Water. Rabbi Soloveitchik phrases this. He says that when you immerse in a mikvah, you are immersing in the primordial substance of creation. The first thing in the universe was water. Says the Sefer HaChinuch something amazing. When I go into the mikvah, and I immerse in, the halacha of tevila is that the water has to encompass every part of my body. What am I doing when I go into the mikvah? I'm literally surrounding myself with the primordial substance of creation. I'm surrounding myself with the very building block of the universe. Ukimoshe kasav, v'ruach alikim rachefes al pnei amayim, v'yitein alibo, So this is absolutely amazing. What water represents, what tevila and the mikvah represents, pazes the Sefer HaChinuch, is the opportunity to start all over again. We often say that we could have do-overs in life, but let's be honest, most of us don't believe it. Most of us don't believe that I can really start over. I can really start again. What I say to myself is, I could start again with all of the handicaps and the schmutz and everything else that I've acquired over the course of life. So I could start again, but it's not really again. It's again with all of my baggage, as we discussed last week, right? It's again with all of the stuff I'm schlepping around. And says the Sefer HaChinuch, that is patently false. What the mikvah teaches us is that when you go into the mikvah and you surround yourself with the primordial substance of creation, I'm literally again wrapping myself in the very building block of creation. I'm wrapping myself in the substance that was the world before there was a world. I have the ability to start again. I have the ability to literally gain a tabula rasa, a blank slate. I can make of myself what I want to be. I can be the person I want to be. I can live the life I want to live. It's true. There are constraints and there are realities and there are a whole bunch of things that we have to operate within. But the ability to start new is there for us every single time. I want to tell you a little secret. You don't even have to use the mikvah to go ahead and activate this power. In other words, the mikvah is in a literal sense and in a metaphoric sense, the ability to start over. But the incredible part is I don't have to go to the mikvah every single time I start over. There's a message of the mikvah that can be activated even without the active usage of the mikvah. The waters of the mikvah remind me that I can start again whenever I want. I have the ability to start all over. And this is an incredible idea. If there's something about your personality that you don't like, there's a very simple etza, which is change it. Change it. I just saved you a few hundred dollars in therapy, right? Change it. Change it. Oh, it's so difficult. Of course it's difficult. Change is always difficult. But if you want to start over, you want to be a better spouse, you want to be a better mother, you want to be a better mother-in-law, right? You want to be a better friend, you want to be a better sibling, whatever you want to be in life, change it. Change it. Impossible? No. Not impossible. Maybe difficult. Maybe exceptionally challenging, but just like if I go to the mikvah again, I'm a brand new person, I could go to the mikvah metaphorically and also decide, you know what? I don't need to be this way. I don't need to be this way. I don't have to act this way. I don't have to talk this way. I don't have to behave this way. That trait, which I know is holding me back, I can choose to let it go. That animosity from a broken relationship that is holding me back, I can choose to release it. The grudge that I'm holding against someone for something they did to me so long ago that I can't even remember what it is that they did, but I know I dislike them for doing it, I can let it go. I can let it go. I can remake myself whenever and however I want. And that's the message of the Mayim. So the incredible part is, the water gives us two messages. On one hand, the water tells us, don't be like me. I am cut off. I am stunted in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Churban stunted me. But Churban, destruction, national or personal, need not stunt you. And in message number two, the water says, be like me. Be like me. I am the primordial substance of creation. I represent the world beginning anew. You could tap into my energy as well and start anew whenever you want. I'll tell you something amazing. With this, I'll end. I forgot to put it on the sheet. But you know, in last week's parasha, parasha's Vayichi, there's a pasuk, of course, that resonates with many of us. And the pasuk is, this is in Parak Memches, pasuk Chaf. So this is where Yaakov Avinu gives the bracha to Yosef's sons. And he says, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim ke Menasha. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu, we bless our children, we bless our sons with this bracha to this very day. That Kadosh Baruch Hu should go and make you like Ephraim and Menasha. So why Ephraim and Menasha? It's all other discussion. But the introduction to that pasuk is amazing. The pasuk says, this is in Perek Memches, pasuk Chav, chapter 48, verse 20. I'm going to ask you that when you go home, you'll look up this pasuk. And you should take a picture of it. You can make it the screensaver on your phone. You can make it the screensaver on your computer. You can put it as next to your Camp Bracha, T.A. Honor Roll, or Chadash, Tibonos, after every other bumper sticker. If you have a little bit of room left, you can put it on there also. So listen to this. The pasuk begins, Vayivarechim bayomahu leimor. Yaakov Avinu blessed his children on that day, saying, Becho yivarech Yisrael leimor. Through you, Jewish people will bless their children. Yisimcha lim kefraim cheminasha. The Baal Shem Tov makes an amazing observation. He says the bracha is in the beginning phrase of that pasuk. Vayivarechim. He gave them a bracha. What was the bracha that Yaakov gave to his grandsons? Bayom hahu. That's the bracha. The bracha is bayomahu. The bracha is recognized that every single day is a lifetime unto itself. Every single day is a universe unto itself. You don't like how yesterday went? It's okay. Make it different today. Today you're not happy with, you could do better tomorrow. The greatest bracha that Yaakov gave to his children, and the bracha that we have to this very day, is the bracha of Bayom Hahu. Today. Today, yesterday, tomorrow, lifetimes in and of themselves. You don't like the you were yesterday? Remake yourself today. Take a dip in the metaphoric mikvah. Surround yourself with the primordial substance of creation of water. And remake yourself into the person you want to be. Ah, it's so difficult. Yes, it's so difficult. Most things in life that are meaningful are absolutely difficult. More meaningful it is, the more difficult ultimately it becomes. But if we want it, if we truly desire to remake ourselves, that gift and that opportunity is within reach each and every day. Okay. It's Vayivarchim Bayom Hahu, Leymar. Perek Memches, Pasuk Chaf.